Okay, good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Thursday night Shiurim after hiatus due to Yom Tov. Hope everyone had an enjoyable and fulfilling Yom Tov season. And Bez Hashem, we'll meet as usual on Thursday nights for the foreseeable future. I'm still not sure what the shul's plans are in terms of switching back to in-person. So in the meanwhile, we're still here on the Zoom, and we'll see how things play out in the coming weeks. So, of course, this Shabbos, we begin the Torah again. We mentioned Simchas Torah, we read the beginning of Parashat Bereishis. I'd just like to look at something with regards to the fourth day of creation that has a possible impact on a very fascinating Shaila regarding the international dateline, what's known as the international dateline. Somebody, Rabbi Mordechai Kuber, who was a Rav in Paramus for many years, this is clear, right, you're open Paramus, right? So he just published, I haven't seen, I just saw excerpts of it, the whole three-volume work on this issue. It's a fascinating issue, I'll get to it in a moment. But let's begin with the Psukim in this week's Sedra for regarding the fourth day of creation, Perek Aleph Bereishis, starting with Pasuk Yud Daled. So it's Ha'amar Elokim Himbo Rosh Perkina Shemayim L'Havdil Bein Ha'Yom Bein Ha'Laila. They're going to be luminaries, light-giving or light-reflecting spheres in the sky that are going to help us determine what's day and what's night. And it's also going to determine the years and the days and so on and so forth. This, of course, the Pasuk Tezayin says, because Baruch Hu created the two large spheres from the point of view of Earth, right, as Amor HaGodol HaMemshelas Hayom, as Hamor HaKotam L'Mishalas HaLayla, the large luminary to be out to rule, so to speak, during the day, the smaller one, the moon, during the night. And it says, Vayitan HaSonu Kimber Kiyah Shemayim L'Haaretz. If God placed him in the sky to give light to the world. We know that the moon does not give off any light of its own. It reflects the light from the sun. But vis-a-vis our position here on Earth, it looks like the sun is shining, the moon is shining. And that gives us the light from these heavenly spheres. And that, of course, is what determines what's day and what's night. Now, this is actually on the fourth day of creation, as we said. So how exactly we had the first 3 days, Vayera, Vayvoker, what determined that exactly? If you didn't have... If you had darkness and you had light, what exactly does that mean? On the first day of creation, light and darkness were created. So without the sun and the moon, so it's hard to figure that out. That has ramifications for other dinim. Also, just as a side point, Rav Soloveitchik pointed this out in one of the essays in the Yartzeit Drosh Shurim Zechav Mari, but it's obvious. It's, you know, there's a question that's nogei l'halacha, not the topic I want to speak about tonight. Just very quickly, how do you measure day and night in terms of halacha? Let's say you have a mitzvah that has to be done during the day. We just had Netilas Lulav. Netilas Lulav, the Sugin Megillah Mishnah Megillah says, has to be done during the day. We don't take the Lulav and Esrog at night. Has to be done during the day. So when does day start? Does day start at Alos HaShachar, which we call more or less dawn, okay? Or does it start with the rising of the sun? Dawn is considerably earlier, at least an hour earlier. Again, depending on angles and where you are, but more or less, dawn is earlier than sunrise. So what is the official beginning of the day? Same thing at the end of the day. When does the day end? Does the day end at sunset, Shkia Sachama, or does it end when it gets dark out? That's not the same thing. And there's a time in between. And how much time there is in between depends, again, on the season. It depends on where you are in regards to the equator and other factors as well. But this is a suffix, and it's interesting, we should consider Bein HaShmoshes to be a suffix, right? The Bein HaShmoshes is a suffix. Is it suffix Yom, suffix Lila? So let's say on Shabbos, we're machmir in both directions. We begin Shabbos when the sun sets, right? And we end Shabbos after it gets dark. We don't, Shabbos is always more than 24 hours. Again, I'm oversimplifying a complicated subject, but just for simplistic purposes now, that's the suffix of Bein HaShmoshes. Now, actually, there's a Ritva, I forgot where, I think in Yuma, somewhere the Ritva says that actually it's not a suffix. That, what do you mean it's a suffix? It's a suffix, so the Rabbanan should simply decide, well, what's the psak? You know, paskin one way or the other. The answer is a different kind of suffix. It's a suffix where it has properties of both. In other words, it's inherently a suffix. There's no resolution. And the Rav said this suffix is already hinted at in the psukim here in our Sedra in Bereishis, because when it comes to the first day of creation, it says, that's in Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayikra Elokim Lo'or Yom V'Lachoshech Kara Laila. Because Baruch Hu said Yom is when there's or, as long as it's light out. as long as it's light out. And when it's dark out, it's called night. So that's this pasuk. That pasuk would seem to indicate that it's not so much the matter of the presence or the non-presence of the sun. Is it light out? We know that after the sun sets, especially in the summertime, around here, right after the sun sets, it's light out for quite a while, right? Depends where you are. In Eretz Yisrael, it's very, very brief time. Between the time the sun sets and it actually gets dark. It depends on other, factors as to where you are. But again, the first day of creation, Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey, makes it sound like the definition of day is the presence of light. Vayikra Elokim La'or Yom, V'Nechosheh Kara Laila. On the other hand, the Pasuk we just read regarding the fourth day of creation says, Pasuk Tezayin, as a mor hagadol shel hayom, the mor hagadol, the large luminary that we call the sun is out during the day, and a mor katan shel halayla, right? The smaller one, the moon, is out at night. There, it sounds like the definition of day depends upon the sun. So that's exactly the question. Alos hashachar in the morning, it's already light out. It's already quite light out, even before the sun. Not as light as when the sun comes up, but it's pretty light out for quite a while before the sun comes up. So if you say that the definition of day is the presence of light, so then the day begins at dawn, when it begins to get light. On the other hand, if you say the day is defined by the presence of the sun, so it's not going to begin until sunrise. Same thing at the other end. If you say that the day is defined by the presence of the sun, so as soon as the sun sets, the day is over. Shkia Sachama. On the other hand, you say it depends on the presence of light, so it is light for a while after Shkia Sachama. It doesn't get dark until the time we call Tzeisa Kocham. So that's one thing. Again, it's not our topic this evening, but it's something to bear in mind from these psukim. But what I really wanted to look at, as I said earlier, was with regard to the international dateline. The Pasuk says, again, Pasuk Yodzayin, a parakalav, Eitan Elokim, Osama Elokim, Berekiah HaShamayim, right? These luminaries, we'll focus on the sun that was placed in the sky, right? To shine over the earth. So that moment when the sun was placed in the sky, let's assume it means the middle of the sky. The sun was put right in the middle of the sky. The middle of the sky vis-a-vis what part of earth? Because we know that the sun is in the same place, but what you see of the sun or don't see of the sun depends on where you are on earth. So the earth is a sphere, it's a globe, a ball. So, let's assume the sun is shining over the top. What's the top? Well, we set up the globe, usually you buy a globe. So the top of the earth is the North Pole. Why? It's a sphere. The top of this could be the South Pole too. Right, just by convention, we set it up that way, right? That's north, that's south. I don't know, maybe the people in the South Pole think they're on the top of the world instead of on the bottom of the world, right? It's the same, it's a ball. So any point could be the top of the round sphere. Any point can be the top of the sphere, right? So the question is, what is the top of the sphere from the point of view of halacha, or from the point of view of this point when the sun was placed in the middle of the sky, so shining over, let's say, the top of the sphere, the top of the ball. But what is the top of the ball? Okay, that's exactly the question. So we'll come back to that point in a minute. Let me just explain a little bit about the idea of the international dateline altogether for those who don't know. Obviously, there's a place on Earth where the calendar date has to change. Okay. And the idea is very simply as follows. Let's assume for a moment, let's pick an example. Let's say you're in New York, okay? Let's say it's in New York, it's Sunday evening, and now it's just before midnight, and therefore at midnight it becomes Monday in New York, right? We're in the New York area, so on the Eastern time, it becomes, so it's at 12 midnight, that's the day. Well, it's not, then it becomes Monday. It doesn't become Monday for another 3 hours in California, right? Because they're 3 hours, quote unquote, behind us. So when it's 12 o'clock midnight over here in New York, it's only 9 o'clock in the evening in California. So over here, it becomes midnight. Okay. The day changes. Sunday turns into Monday. Today's Thursday. Whatever example you want to use. Thursday turns into Friday, according to the secular calendar, 12 midnight. But that's not true in California. California is still Thursday night for another 3 hours. And if you go further west, okay, it's not going to become Monday for a few hours after that, till a few hours after that in Hawaii. Hawaii is further behind. You'll keep traveling west, okay, and it won't become Monday in the Orient and so on until hours after that. Eventually, keep going west, right? It's earlier. It's 9 o'clock in California, and it's 6 o'clock in Hawaii, and it's 3 o'clock here. You keep going back all the way around the earth. You'll come back to New York. keep going west. You start in New York, go west, and keep eventually you come around the whole globe and you come back to New York. But it can't be again
email.
Sunday night going into Monday, because you already had Sunday night going into Monday, right? You can't, because it's earlier. So what, you'll never get out of it. What is that? It's Groundhog Day. You'll never get out of it, right? It'll be Sunday night to Monday forever. It's impossible, right? There's got to be a point where what we call the international dateline, where it becomes the next day. Otherwise, how can it be, right? Again, you keep going hours earlier. You go around the globe, you come back to New York. So now it's again Sunday night going to Monday. That was 24 hours ago, whatever. So yeah, obviously, there has to be a point. It can't be again midnight going to Monday. That already happened 24 hours earlier. So it'll have to be Monday going to Tuesday. So at some point, somewhere in the line, midnight will no longer be starting Sunday night to Monday, but it'll be Monday night to Tuesday. That's the idea of the international dateline. For many years, most of history, who cared? Well, what difference did it make? You know, there was not much connection between people in China and people in the United States, and there was no people, Europeans in the United States. It didn't matter, you know, that they were, what time it was in England, didn't make any difference. But as, you know, people began to travel and so on and so forth, trade and so on, and there was certain standards. So in the 1880s, okay, in the 1880s, they made a decision that there has to be some arbitrary point, some point on the globe where it's going to no longer be Sunday night going to Monday. Again, it's Sunday night, Monday into Monday, 12 midnight New York, 3 hours later in California, a few hours after in Hawaii. Eventually, they have to change it to not Sunday night to Monday anymore, but Monday night into Tuesday. So where is that point? So in 1884, there was a conference called the International Meridian Conference, and it decided that that point would be exactly 180 degrees from Greenwich, England. Greenwich, England is the center of time in the secular world. Greenwich Mean Time, they call it, right? Exactly 180 degrees. The other side of Greenwich, that cuts basically through the Pacific Ocean. It doesn't interfere with any landmass. That doesn't bother anybody, okay? But anybody who's ever traveled, I haven't, but anyone who's ever traveled to Hong Kong or to the Orient or whatever, to China, Japan, to Australia, crosses the international dateline. Right, it could be a long, long day, okay, or the other way, right, depending on which way you're going. But in any event, the international dateline is in one place in the middle of the Pacific Ocean somewhere, and as soon as you cross that point, it's the next day already, right? I mean, a friend of mine told me he was going to Hong Kong on business, and you leave on Monday, you get there the following Thursday. I don't know, it's all right. They're way ahead of us, right? If you ever watched New Year's Eve, right? They're already celebrating New Year's in Australia long before we do, right? So that's because of the international dateline. So the question is, that's very nice for the secular world to make that decision. In 1884, this International Meridian Conference decided that the international dateline is there in the middle Pacific Ocean. But that's because it's 180 degrees from Greenwich, England. Obviously, the halacha doesn't consider Greenwich, England to have any particular significance over any place else in the world. Okay, so for us, what's considered the center of the universe is Eretz Yisrael, is Yerushalayim. In fact, the truth of the matter is, looking at the globe, coming back to what I said before, looking at the ball of the earth, so we consider that Eretz Yisrael is at the top of the earth, right? We have Psukim in the Chumash, right? When in Parshas Vayigash, gracious Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Tes, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, he tells the brothers, Maharu Va'alu El Avi, go up to our father. They were in Egypt, right? Yosef was the viceroy in Egypt. He's telling his brothers, go up, Va'alu. Okay? And later on, when he's going down, earlier, when they came down, it says, Vayerdu Achi Yosef Asara. The 10 brothers came down to Mitzrayim. What's up and down? What do you mean up and down? So the Gemara in Kiddushin, and Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph, makes a statement that Eretz Yisrael, okay, that's based on other psukim, also a pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. We had a number of weeks ago in the Varim Perek Zayin, Pasuk Ches. It says that you have a question, you have a shailan halacha. So it says, "V'kamta v'alisa alamakom." You go up to the place where the Sanhedrin is. You have a shailah. Ki yelachem dover ben dam ledam ben din ledim ben nega lenega. Diva verse v'sharecha. V'kamta v'alisa alamakom. You could have in different towns. You could have different piske halacha. Okay, it wasn't like today. Today everybody wants to ask every shailah to the galador, and that was never the way it was. Okay, today, I mean, I remember once working here in the Erev and Tinek. So, Rabbi Yashiv's Rav was still alive. So the person was, I was showing the Arab, said, we had a question. Why don't you ask Rabbi Yashiv? We have poskim here. What did I have to ask Rabbi Yashiv? The Gal Adom sent him a picture of the trestle by the railroad tracks in Teaneck, New Jersey. You don't have to ask the Gadol HaDor always. You know, certain shilas can be paskened by the Rabbanim in the local community, assuming that they're qualified. And you can have different Piskei Halacha. Kachi Darka Shel Torah. You can have different Piskei Halacha. But you're not supposed to have different Piskei Halacha in the same town. That's why it says, Kielachem Dover, Ben Dam Ladam, Ben Din Ladin, Ben Negla Negla, Diva Rosh Bisharecha. In the same town, the Rabbanim can't agree. Then I have to go to a higher authority. We come to Avelisa. Anyway, it says the same word, Valisa. Going up to Yerushalayim. So Chazal understand, the Gemara says in Kiddush and Av Samech Tes, that Eretz Yisrael is the highest point in the world. That's what we call to this day. It wasn't made up by the Zionists. When a person goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's making Aliyah. That's the expression we use. When someone leaves Eretz Yisrael, he's making Yerida. Right? I mean, that's not the Zionists didn't make that up in recent years. That's based on Chazal, based on Pesukim and Torah. You go to Eretz Yisrael, that's considered, right? Maharu, Va'alu, Elavi, go up to our father, go up to Eretz Yisrael. Vayerdu Achei Yosef Asar. Later on, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov, you can go down, right? To Kaminyan Redu, you can go down, right? You can go down to Mitzrayim. So the, Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara says, is the highest point in the world. Now, what does it mean Eretz is the highest point in the world? It's not a matter of sea level. In fact, the Dead Sea in Eretz Yisrael, I think, is the lowest point in the world below sea level. And although it gets higher, it doesn't get as high as the Alps or Mount Everest or whatever. There are places in the world which are much higher above sea level than Eretz Yisrael. So it means the highest. So many learn that it means, you know, Derech Ruchnius is the highest place in the world, right? What's higher than Eretz Yisrael? But the Maharsha over there in Kiddushin on Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph, the Kiddush HaGadol Tumah Maaseh Beis Hamikdash, he says the earth is a sphere, and the site of the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael in general, that's the top of the sphere. So in that sense, it's the top. We think like the North Pole is the top of the world. Everyone else is considered to be down there. So from our point of view, Eretz Yisrael is the top of the world, and everything else is lower down than Eretz. Like I said, on a ball, on a sphere, anything can be the top. Depends how you hold the ball. Okay, so for us, Eretz Yisrael is the center. That's another Gemara also in Sanhedrin, Daflam and Zanar Aleph, that the Eretz Yisrael is Betibur Shalom, it's like the belly button, it's the center, you know, the stomach, the center of the sphere. Okay, anyway, that's the center of the world. So we bear that point in mind, Eretz Yisrael is in the but again, that's why we use the same terms, the Aliyah and Yerida. I remember Shechter once told us that there's an old joke that the guy was in the Jewish agency, and the elevator stopped, and the person wanted to get in the elevator, one of them was going up and down. So he said to the guy in the elevator, "Ata ole or yored?" Right? He said, "No, I'm a shaliach." Yes, I'm a shaliach. I'm not neither. Now, some of the shaluchim stay here for many years too, but then I'm not an ole, I'm not a yored, I'm a shaliach. But anyway, that's the idea of ole or yored is used in terms of Eretz Yisrael even today. So, in any event, for us, so the question is, where is the international dateline for us? I say for us, for Jews, that doesn't, obviously we don't assign, halacha doesn't assign any particular significance to Greenwich, England. So the truth of the matter is, Rav Mendel Kasher, Menachem Mendel Kasher was a Rav, a great Talmud Chacham. He's the one who produced the Torah Shlema, an encyclopedic work on order of the Pesukim of the Torah. You know, just collecting every medrash and every Maamar Chazal, just a tremendous, tremendous work. And he also has some other off the beaten path works. And he has something called about the Kava Tarikh also. He has another Sefer, which he published in 1969 by the first moon landing, talking about what halachas would be in effect if a man is on the moon. Adam Al Yarech, it's called. I happen to have it here at home. But anyway, so it was a very interesting Talmud Chacham, Rav Mendel Kasher. And he was of the opinion that you can't really prove anything conclusively from any Gemara, and therefore it's random. So we can follow what the rest of the world does. It's random anyways. It has to be someplace. Again, scientifically, logically, it has to be someplace. So there's no reason for us to worry about where it is. We'll follow the convention in the world. That's what he said. Rav Shlomo Zevin has a sefer called Le'or HaHalacha. His more famous sefer is called Hamodin BaHalacha. That's all about Yantav, a wonderful sefer, which is available in English also, the Festival of Halacha. Rav Zevin was a great Talmud Chacham who died, I forget exactly when, not that long. I was at his Levaya. I happened to be in Eretz Yisrael at the time when he had died. And, in fact, I think I once mentioned I was at, when Rav Zevin died. So they, you know, they marched, you've seen pictures of Levaya's Yerushalayim. I'm not saying this was as crowded as Rav Yosef or whatever, but certainly a lot of people. And they took his, his remains, his goof from, I guess, from Geula to Har HaMenuchos. They walked through the streets of Yerushalayim. So the way it was set up, the way it works there, in Eretz Yisrael, you know, they don't bury in a coffin. Basically, you're wrapped up in, looks like a hammock. Okay, just completely wrapped up. And they have ropes. That's how it seems from the Gemara. They have ropes. And different people hold the rope to carry the mace. Four ropes. Different people carrying the ropes to carry the mace, you know, to his final resting place, to his kura. So I remember, and what they do is they let people, as you can get to the front, they'll let you hold it for a minute or two, right? They'll pass it to the next person. So everyone has the schuz to participate in this mitzvah of Havayas HaMace. So, I remember somehow I got near the front, and I waited my turn, and I was Shiva Bach. I forgot already. I don't remember. Maybe it was 40 years ago. I don't remember exactly what it was. I don't think I was married yet. I think I just happened to be in Eretz Yisrael. And so they were. I carried it for a little while, and then I turned around to pass it to the next person. You know, my time was up, so to speak. I passed the next person. And the person I gave it to was a sort of short man. He had a black hat and very thick glasses. And I passed it to him, and I suddenly realized that's Menachem Begin. I was like stunned. Now, by the time I realized who it was, the Secret Service or whatever, the bodyguards, you know, gently or not so gently moved me out of the way, you know. But for like 1 second, you know, it was Menachem Begin. I was just to hand him the rope, you know, to carry him. He attended Rav Zevin's Levi. And then again, after a moment, they, you know, all his entourage was around, and I was no longer near the front. But anyway, so that was Rav Zevin. So Rav Zevin, he wrote this wonderful work called Amod in Bahalacha, which, in my opinion, can be studied by somebody who's very knowledgeable in Halacha and somebody just a beginner. He has a very clear, a beautifully clear way of explaining things. But a different sefer, lesser known and not translated into English, called L'Or HaHalacha, where he has essays on, again, different interesting subjects. A long essay on things related to Milchama, has something about the Akedah, has a very fascinating article I spoke about once on treating the case from Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice. It's called a Mishpat Shylock. I spoke about it a couple of years ago with my father's English professor. So I said over Rav Zevin's piece on the, he said, what would have been had Shylock taken, had that case come to a bezin? Very interesting. He had off the beaten path kinds of things. Anyway, so he has an essay there on page Reish Pei Hei. He talks about the international dateline. He says, he quotes the Radvaz, the Chuvas Radvaz, Chelik Aleph Siman Ayin Vov. And he says, already Machokas Rishonim, and others deal with this and so on. So, but Rav Zevin, Rav Zevin says it could be where the world is, but that's not where the world considers. But others disagree. Okay. One of the things which Rav Zevin quotes, one of the sources he quotes, an early source, is a Baal HaMor in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chaf Amud Beis, the long Baal HaMor. Basically, the Gemara there on Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Amud Beis says that Bezdin would never declare a day to be Rosh Chodesh unless the new moon would be visible in Eretz Yisrael sometime before noon on that day. In other words, you know, in order for a day to be Rosh Chodesh, it had to be at least 6 hours of Rosh Chodesh had to be, you know, the moon had to be visible in Eretz Yisrael it had to be before the last 6 hours of the day. It's before noon, the moon had to be visible in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, ostensibly, that may not have anything to do with the international dateline. And many Rishonim learned that it's a separate din in Rosh Chodesh. But the Baal HaMor says that this is exactly the international dateline issue, because the Gemara says the reason why Bezin would not declare a day to be Rosh Chodesh unless the moon appeared before 12 noon in Yerushalayim is that Rosh Chodesh has to be 24 hours long somewhere in the world. Okay, again, the rule of the Gemara is they wouldn't declare a day to be Rosh Chodesh unless the moon was visible in Eretz Yisrael sometime before 12 noon. Okay, and again, some Rishonim said it's a local din about Rosh Chodesh, nothing to do with us. However, apparently the reason is that Rosh Chodesh has to be 24 hours somewhere in the world. In other words, there's got to be some place on earth that will experience nightfall at the time or after the Molad, when the moon is first visible in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now again, because when the moon appears, when we announce the Molad in Shul, we didn't do it obviously with Rosh Hashanah, you know, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah, so we take about Kesel Yom Chagena, so we cover up the fact that it was Rosh Chodesh. But This Shabbos, this Shabbos is Shabbos of Orchim, right? So this Shabbos, they'll announce the Molad. The Molad, many times, I'm not sure it'll be, whatever time it is, 12 minutes, after 4 p.m., Yerushalayim time. That's the, I don't know if, I say that much always, when I announce the Molad, many rabbis say it, but even if they don't say it, that's the fact. The time that's printed in the Luach, as is Torah Luach and all the other Luachs for the Molad is Eretz Yisrael time, Yerushalayim time. Okay, and you can look on some charts, they printed adjusted to the local time. But I mean, Yerushalayim, and there's a difference between the solar time and the standard time, but we're not going to that now. The Molad is Yerushalayim time. So therefore, the Molad must be, in effect, sometime before 12 noon on that day in order for it to be called Rosh Chodesh. And that way, the newly declared Rosh Chodesh will be 24 hours in one place, somewhere in the world. In other words, bottom line, what it means is that, and that's how the Balamor explains in that sugya. If Rosh Chodesh is declared in Yerushalayim any time between nightfall and 12 noon, 18 hours later, the first 18 hours of the day, let's assume nightfall 6 o'clock, so 18 hours later from nightfall till 12 noon, so that means there'll still be some place in the world, more than one place, but there'll be at least one place in the world that will have the full 24 hours of the new Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, if it's noon in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Molad, that means only 6 hours left of Rosh Chodesh in Eretz Yisrael, right? There's only 6 hours left. But there's still some place on earth where it was just nightfall, and they'll have the full 24 hours. Now, if the Molad appears in Yerushalayim after noon, after 12 noon, then there will no longer be any place. Let's say the Molad's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Yerushalayim time. That means that by definition, according to this approach, there'll be no time, no place on earth that will have the full 24 hours of Rosh Chodesh. So the Baal HaMor says is basically that noontime in Yerushalayim is the last time at which there is still some place on earth that has not yet begun the new day. Now noon is 18 hours after nightfall. So what that means is that there is some place far west of Yerushalayim, which is still 18 hours behind it in time. Am I making it clear? In other words, if this is correct, that's what Baal HaMor is saying. If it's correct that it's only up until noon in Yerushalayim that you can say that if the Molad is declared at that hour, there will be some place on earth that will have a full 24 hours of Shkodesh. Of course, I mean, if the Molad is 6:01 in Yerushalayim, so Eretz Yisrael have 24 hours of Shkodesh, you know. But I'm saying, but even if the Molad is later, it's 12, it's 18 hours later. It's 18 hours after nightfall in Eretz Yisrael, but it seems the way the Baal HaMor learns the Gemara, it means there's still some place on earth that is still 18 hours behind Yerushalayim in time, that they're just starting this new day. It's noon in Yerushalayim, but it's nightfall 18 hours earlier, far west of Yerushalayim. That's the idea. Okay, so this is what the Baal HaMor says. In other words, again, that noon in Yerushalayim is the latest time at which there is still some location on earth which has not yet begun the new day, which is just nightfall. And since noon is 18 hours after nightfall, that means there's a location far west of Yerushalayim, which is 18 hours behind Yerushalayim in terms of time. So apparently, what does that mean? More than 18 hours west of Yerushalayim is not behind in time, but is ahead of in time. You follow? That's the chiddush here. There, if there's a place far west of Yerushalayim, is 18 hours behind. The maximum that behind is 18 hours. But further west than that, if you're going further west than 18 hours behind Yerushalayim, then it's not. There's no such thing as 19 hours behind Yerushalayim. It doesn't exist. Otherwise, you could say that the Molad could be at 1 p.m. in Yerushalayim or 2. No, noon is the last time that it could be the beginning of the day somewhere. So therefore, it must be that any place further west than 18 hours is no longer the behind Yerushalayim, but actually ahead of Yerushalayim. Right there would be 6 hours ahead of Yerushalayim. Okay? So it thus seem that the Gemara says the Baal HaMor has determined that that's the international dateline. Doesn't use that terminology, but that's exactly the point. 18 hours to the west of Yerushalayim is still behind it in time. More than 18 hours is ahead of it. So it's going to be 6 hours ahead or 5 hours ahead, 4 hours ahead, the closer you get to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? What that means on the globe is that the international dateline is 270 degrees west of Yerushalayim, okay, or 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim, right? It's 360 degrees, right, the circle. So 270 degrees west is behind, and then 90 degrees to the east is going to be ahead of Eretz Yisrael. All right, that's the international dateline in Halacha. According to this Balamor, and the Sefer Kuzari also seems to say this, Mamar Beis Simr Chof, okay, also says this, has this pshat. So this is what's accepted by some Rishon, the Ran, the Kedusha Ran and Rosh Hashanah. Duas Hatzor quotes this, and the Ritva and his Kedushim there quoted also. So that's, according to this, these Rishonim have, without using the terminology or explaining the way we do the international dateline, but that's the point. 18 hour, 270 degrees, okay, around the, you know, around the globe, 270 degrees east of Yerushalayim, I'm sorry, 270 degrees west of Yerushalayim is behind in time, and that's the cutoff point, and 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim is the beginning of the new, day. Okay, or is a day is ahead of Yerushalayim. So it's interesting that some would suggest, if Chaim Zimmern was a big Talmud Chacham here in America, he has a big fat sefer called Agan HaSahar, which has a lot of things on the international dateline. Perek Beis, page Yotes, he says that it comes back to our Pasuk. Because if we should assume, let's think for a moment, if we should assume that the sun was positioned in the earth, on the Pasuk in our Sedra, that the sun was placed in the middle of the earth, okay? In the middle of the sky, I mean, it's Vayita, what's the Pasuk again? Vayita in Osam Elokim Berekiah HaShemayim, right? The sun was placed in the middle of the sky, presumably the middle of the sky. The middle of the sky over what? Over what part of earth? Middle of the sky over America, over China? No, presumably over Yerushalayim, the top of the world, right? It's placed in the middle of the sky above Eretz Yisrael. Okay, well, at that point, okay, you know, what time it's, so it's 12 noon, let's say, right? The sun's in the middle of the sky. That's what we call 12 noon. So the sun on the fourth day of creation was placed in the middle of the sky over Yerushalayim. So what time is that elsewhere? So again, if you think about it, when the sun is at 12 noon in the middle of the sky over Yerushalayim, it's just setting 6 hours to the east. So basically, that day, that was the first place on earth to go on from Yom Revi'i to Yom Chamishi. Now that the sun is playing the role in terms of determining what day of the week it is, okay, or what defining day, so when the sun is placed in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, so 6 hours or 90 degrees to the east of Eretz Yisrael, they're already experiencing nightfall. Right? They're 6 hours, quote-unquote, ahead. It's been nightfall. So that was the very first place on earth that moved on to the next day. So Mustaber to say, that's the international dateline. That's where the date changes, right? And the very first place that the date changed. That was on day four, going to day five. That was the first day. Okay, 90 degrees or east hour, 6 hours east of Yerushalayim, they were experiencing sunset at that point. And so that must be the dateline, because that was the first place on earth to go on to the next day. And that's exactly where the Baal HaMor says it is also 6 hours or 90 degrees east, and that'll be shown him as well. So this is a very, very interesting suggestion. This debate or this question, because others disagree. Others agree in principle that yes, Eretz Yisrael is the middle, but it's a little awkward. What do you mean 6 hours? Like, just like the world picked the international dateline in the middle of the Pacific Ocean because 180 degrees, you know, in each direction is 180 degrees from Greenwich Ingle. It's the other side of the line, so to speak, right? So there's some poskim who say that, no, the international date, leaving out this Baal HaMor, they say we don't pass like this Baal HaMor. That's what the Gemara means. The Gemara wasn't talking about that. They say that the international dateline is 108, not 90 degrees east of Eretz Yisrael, but 180 degrees east and 180 degrees west, obviously, right? In other words, exactly on the other side from Yerushalayim. Okay, that is the position which some suggest. This was a significant discussion when Jews had to run away from the Nazis, landed up in Shanghai, in China. And, you know, Japan up in the Kobe, and that part of the world was already, you know, a different day there. So they had a big question, first of all, a question about Shabbos, but a bigger question about Yom Kippur, and so on and so forth. So there was a big discussion, okay, Rechil Michal Tukachinsky. Rechil Michal Tukachinsky is one of the great Talmidei Chacham in Yerushalayim in the mid-1900s. And he wrote, probably the most famous work is the Geshar HaChaim, Hilchos Avelos, very important work. But he wrote other important works too, Erech HaKadosh HaMikdash. And he in Eretz Yisrael, the luach that you get usually is the luach al pi, the psachim of Tukhachevsky. Here in America, the regular luach is based on Rav Henkin's Piskei Halacha. There's a Torah luach, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's based on Tukhachevsky. So Tukhachevsky wrote the sefer called Hayomam Bekadur HaAretz. Okay. And he wrote that, he felt that the new day begins 12 hours to east of Shalim and ends 12 hours to the west. So the date line is 180 degrees in the direction of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. And again, Rav Zevin quotes this in that same Sefer, in that same Lor HaLocha. This is on page Resh Pei Zayin. He says the advantage of this position is Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world, right? It's perfect. And it's 180 degrees in each direction. It works out very nicely. Okay. However, the Chazon Ish very sharply disagreed with this. The Chazon Ish, who was not that well known yet, when he started writing, wrote this. This is printed now in the Sefer Chazon Ish in Or HaChaim, in Siman Samach Dalet. He wrote an essay called Kuntres Yud Ches Shos, an article or an essay, a composition, about 18 hours. Okay, and he asserts very forcefully that it's clear that the Baal HaMor is right, and all the Rishonim will discuss it, agree with the Baal HaMor, and the Kuzari agrees with it, and so on and so forth. And he said, perhaps the Rambam agrees to it also. And the Chazon Ish writes very strongly, he doesn't think there's any room for debate. It's interesting because he corresponded back and forth with the Rechil Mikl Tuchinsky on this subject. Chazon Ish was not well known. Chazon Ish's name was Rav Yishai Karelitz. And he lived in Bnei Brak. He didn't have a yeshiva. Chazon Ish didn't have a yeshiva. He learned, he sat and learned all day. He had people talk to him and so on and so forth, but he was, you know, he was sort of quiet. He was writing Svarim and so on. He was not so well known, initially. In fact, I remember hearing a story once that he would go sometimes for, he needed to exercise, I would walk in a park nearby in Bnei Brak. And he would go for a walk. And it was a Talmud Chacham, who would, in that same park, sat at one of the benches, always learning. He was learning. And he didn't know who this man was, but he saw, every day he saw this man walking around, you know, seemingly not doing too much. And he said to him, you know, he said, what do you waste so much time walking? You should learn a little bit. You know, what do you waste? He's giving the Chazon Ish most of it. He says, you waste time every day. I come to the park. I see you walking around here. You know, don't waste your life away. Go do something creative, you know. Okay. And the Chazon Ish took the Musar, you know. But anyway, so in this, the other correspondence, when he first wrote to people, so they didn't know who he was. So I think it's in this correspondence of Tukhachevsky wrote back, printed in his essay, Kibalti Michtav Meharav Avram Kevelitz of Bnei Brak. Okay, just call them a rav. Then the Chazon Ish wrote back, and Rav Tukhachevsky was very impressed. Kibalti Od Michtav Meharav Agon Rav Avram Kevelitz. Every letter he gave him more titles because he kept seeing what a great Talmud Chacham this was. Kibalti Od Michtav Meharav HaAdir Sarata. He gave all kinds of accolades because first, you know, he was. That gave him a nice honorific title. As he corresponded more, Rav Tukhachevsky realized, wow, this person knows what he's talking about. So he gives him more and more titles, but ultimately he didn't agree with him on this subject. Okay. And, in 1941, there was a meeting of the chief rabbinate in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. This is printed in the biography of the Chazon Ish, the sefer called Be'er Hador, the Chel Gimel Perichof Dala. There was a meeting of the chief rabbinate in Eretz Yisrael in 1941 to correspond, to answer correspondence to the Jews in the Orient who were there because of the, you know, they ran away from the Nazis there. And it was, it was the other position that was accepted, including by R.T. Pesach Frank. There's a truth about this also. Or Chaim Chelik Aleph Siman Kuf Lamed Hey. However, the Chazon Ish insisted that his opinion was correct. He wrote letters to Chazon Ish, and he said he can't keep silent about this issue because he thinks it's a mistake, and he thinks all of you shown him the Igros Chazon Ish should look in Kuf Sama Bab Kuf Sama Hey. He writes that there's no argument here; it's clear, and he feels that he doesn't like to get involved in things that involve other Rabbanim. But he felt very, very strongly about it, and he says that it's true. Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world. Okay, so the other position works out very nicely because 180 degrees. But nonetheless, he explains that away. He says we're only looking at the upper atmosphere and so on. So it's the top of the upper atmosphere, and therefore the boundaries are 90 degrees. It works it out also. One of the problems with the position of Tukhachevsky, and I will see in the slides also, is that it cuts through Hawaii. It cuts through Hawaii and Alaska. That's 180 degrees on the other side. The Chazon Ish's problem also is that, like I said before, the position which the secular world accepts, you know, based on that International Meridian Conference in the 1880s, it's basically cut through the Pacific Ocean. They bend it in a few places at some place at the same time. It's more or less straight through the Pacific Ocean, the middle of the ocean. So who cares? The fish aren't keeping track of the day. So it doesn't bother anybody. Your boat goes over it. They'll make an announcement to change, or the airplane goes over. Then now we change to Monday, whatever day it is. But the problem with the Chazon Ish is that his dateline, which is 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim, cuts through landmass in eastern Russia, in part of China, I think Manchuria, and Australia. Okay, so that means theoretically, in one country, and even theoretically in one city, you can have it's two different days of the week, right? So it's a little bit strange. Now, supposedly, Rebbe Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rebbe, said, "Okay, so I'll be on this side of the street at Shabbos, you'll be on that side of the street on Sunday. We wish me a good Shabbos, you know." But that sounds very, very strange, you know, that should happen. That comes up also another interesting question when you're keeping, you know, if you go to the places where it doesn't get dark, right? You go to the list in the summertime. I mean, now it's almost finished, I guess, already. But there are places where it's dark almost the whole year and light almost the whole year, depending, you know, on the season. So let's say you travel from, so the Tiferes Yisrael writes, the mission, the end of the first Parak and Brochas, that did. He said people who were hunting for volfish, whales, okay, whalers. They were Jews, so the ones who came from America, the ones who came from Europe. So they were keeping Shabbos based on them in America. They were keeping it with a different day. So that comes up with that question also, which we once talked about. But anyway, here, it'll be a little strange that in the same country, in the same city, you could have a one-sided street. That's where the line goes to. The one-sided street is Shabbos, one-sided street is not Shabbos. So the Chazon Ish explains in his essay that it wouldn't happen, because he proves that any landmass, which with a significant portion of the land is to the west of the dateline, then it's considered to be halakhically the whole land is considered that place, even if in that time zone, even if or that day, even if physically it's not. In other words, he says basically the international dateline bends to accommodate the landmass. Okay, so therefore, all of eastern Russia, China, and Australia are considered to be east of Eretz Yisrael, ahead in time, even though they are not behind. Okay, but what's interesting is that according to the Chazon Ish, Japan, and that's always the issue there, Japan is definitely east of the halachic dateline. Japan is definitely east of the halachic dateline, even though it's not, you know, even though according to the, you know, east meaning that it's, you know, that it's ahead in time, right? The Japan is definitely east of the dateline. Okay, I'm sorry, it's east of Eretz Yisrael. Start again. No, Japan is east of the halakhic dateline, and therefore is behind Eretz Yisrael in time. Yeah, it's at the east. So therefore it's behind, if, you know, if you're traveling west from Eretz Yisrael, hit Japan. So Japan is before the dateline, traveling west from Eretz Yisrael. So that means Japan is behind Eretz Yisrael in time, but according to the international dateline, it's already to the west of the international dateline, so it's the next day. And the same thing is true in New Zealand. So Australia and New Zealand won't be the same. Because as I said before, according to the Chazon Ish, it hugs the coastline, but New Zealand is an island, right? New Zealand is off the coast of Australia. So that's a big question. That's a big, big question, what you do. You know, in other words, basically, in New Zealand and in Japan, Shabbos would have to be observed on their Sunday and not on their Saturday. That's what comes out. In Japan and New Zealand, and that's a big issue. Okay. Now, again, if you accept this position of the Chazon Ish, you know, there are Jewish communities there. I think there's some people who avoid staying there for Shabbos, you know, but that's a little hard to do if you live there. But the people avoid going there for Shabbos. In Hawaii, you'd have the other problem. In Hawaii, for sure, according to the regular international dateline, Hawaii is like the United States. According to Tukachinsky's dateline and Tzipesa Frank and so on, those postkin, Hawaii is already the next day. Yeah, so so Shabbos will be on Friday, on their Friday, but not according to Chazon Ish. So I know that my wife is from time to time expressed interest that we should go once on a vacation to Hawaii. So I said, okay, we can go, but I want to go from Sunday to Thursday. I don't want to have to deal with this problem. So we're not flying to Hawaii, who knows how many hours, just to stay for 4 days. So I said, okay, so we'll go there and we'll observe Shabbos for you know, at least we'll observe Shabbos for 2 days. And I'm not doing 2 days Shabbos. She thinks I'm crazy. You know, I'm a nice wife, but she's not crazy. So I think a couple of years ago, Rabbi Sabalovsky, a good friend and an important rav in our community, gave a shiur I think in B'nai Yeshua, I think he gave a shiur also about the international dateline. And she said, I'm going to Beis Havelovsky's shiur. I want to hear what he has to say. And then I'm going to tell you what he said, and you'll listen, you know, to him. So he said the same thing I said. He said, and then he said his wife also wants to go to Hawaii. But he said, he told his wife the same thing. So my wife called us, we'll go to Hawaii. We'll keep Shabbos regular there. And our husbands can stay home. They can keep Shabbos all week. Do whatever they want to do. We're going to go to Hawaii. We don't have to worry about it. Right? But in any event, those are some of the issues about the international deadline. And a number of fascinating Shabbos come up. I'm just going to bring you to think about them. You know, what happens if somebody's traveling? The Shabbos that a person can talk about. What happens if somebody's traveling? Let's say they have a baby boy. And then they cross the international date line. So when is the eighth day in terms of the bris? Or a woman is counting 7 days for nida purposes. Where does that figure in, okay, to this type of account? And there's a fascinating tshuva. If somebody's traveling during the sefira, so you end up possibly missing a day. So you're out now with a brocha because, I mean, you didn't do anything. You didn't forget about it. You know, remember what you didn't. So believe it or not, there seems to be a tshuva from, I think, the Tzemach Tzedek, one of the Babich Rebbe's, who said, if you're coming the other way, you keep counting, you're coming from Japan, you keep counting your day, and you're going to observe Shavuos a different day than everybody else. It's hard to imagine, right? Because, you know, you haven't had 50 days yet. So these are some of the, I think, very fascinating issues that come up in terms of the international dateline. As I said, you have different tashit in the post. Of Shechter, Shalita is convinced that he's told us, unless he changes his mind, but he told us he's convinced that the Chazon Ish is right. He didn't think there was any need to be machmir in Hawaii. He felt that that's what it was. I think the Chabad and the others in Hawaii follow the Chazon Ish, and they have Shabbos on our Saturday, on their Saturday, the same thing, and they don't do it. Some people are machmir. Some people are worried about Shabbos, but they don't worry about Tzvira and other things. And there's also a question of tefillin. People travel to Hong Kong. Okay, so I think, again, you travel there, and so then, by the time you get there, it's already the afternoon the next day. You just don't have a morning. You don't have like a Monday morning, whatever. Okay, so tefillin, you put it on a mincha time. That's all. But you better, but you're low on time. Apparently, it's very late in the day. So a lot of interesting things that come up with regards to international dateline and may relate to this whole issue of the sun being placed in the middle of the sky. It's a very persuasive point that the very first place on earth that went on, quote unquote, to the next day after when the sun was placed in the sky was exactly the point where the Chazon Ish says is the dateline, 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. That's 6 hours ahead. There's no place, and everything else is up to 18 hours behind. No place is further behind. So anyway, these are some of the issues that come up. I think it's always a fascinating topic. And as I said, a recent Sefer was just published, 3 volumes on it. There's all kinds of shilas that come up with regards to this topic. And today, when people travel, I mean, again, at one time it wasn't so relevant who was traveling and what difference it make. But now with people travel all over the place, it's something you have to look into if you're traveling to these parts of the world. Okay, we'll stop over here. Bez Hashem will resume next week, and I'll have the next thing. I hope to have sheets. Yeah, question.
I think Rabbi Cooper mentions for Shabbos.
Yeah.
Hawaii, that Shabbos, I mean, you have to keep Shabbos 2 days, or you have to keep...
Yeah, Isser Malacha, maybe.
The Isser Malacha, right. But the real Shabbos is Friday.
Right, that's according to the role of the... Not the Chazon Ish, but according to many, that would be the case.
Yeah, yeah, he writes, and you should put tefillin on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Now, I mentioned it to Rabbi Neuberger recently, and yeah, he said his rabbeim, he didn't tell me who.
Yeah, Sanato.
The opposite.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where I spoke to Rabbi Shechter about this more than once. Actually, I think Rabbi Shechter, not I think, I know, Rabbi Shechter wrote about this many, many years ago. I think it's maybe the first, one of the early RJJ journals. He wrote about this subject.
Oh.
So, but he's convinced that the Chazon Ish is right. So yeah, I would also pass on the opposite on that basis, but I was nervous. I'm still nervous to go, you know, because, you know, I would also do this the other way on their Friday, but I haven't seen a Rekubi Sefer yet. I'll have to take a look at it. I hope to get it.
It's interesting. He also claims that the locals in Hawaii are keeping the wrong day.
Yeah, right, because they did the other way, right. Yes, it's actually somebody in my shul, Rabbi Butler, Yale Butler,
yeah,
started many years ago. Had a Pesach program. It was the first. He used to run a Pesach program. Had a Pesach program in in Hawaii. And I think they kept it. And he asked Shilas. I don't remember. He told me who they asked. And they said to follow what the local community does. That once that's been established, and there is a Chabad, there is a community there. So that's another argument also. Yeah. All right. I wish everyone a good Shabbos, an interesting subject. And the next week we'll resume regular schedule.
Which is?
Oh, so right now it's still 9:30. And
okay.
Till further notice.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos.